It wasn't just Andrew Benintendi today. It was JD Martinez, who has gotten hot.
That ball is gone! What a bullet by Devers!
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast here on the NESN Podcast Network. The Tom and Jerry title already taken, but this is the real cat and mouse game as Jerry Remy catches up with us each week and we see what's going on. I'm Tom Caron in my house. Jerry Remy is standing by at his house. Jerry, let's begin like we do each week. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm just bored out of my mind. You know, I get up TC every morning. I go for a little drive. That's the only time I get out. Come back to the house and I'm sitting here all day just looking at, you know, watching my soap opera. And after that, it's pretty much until the news comes on. So I'm trying to watch every press conference that comes on, you know, whether it be the mayor, the governor, or the president, just to try to keep up to date with what might be going on and see where we might be going from this. But that's basically been my day. It has been my day since we got home from spring training. How about you?
Yeah, same old, right? Day after day, that's the hardest part. I was talking to couple of people today, a couple of friends, and they were saying, you know, it's the depression part can get real, you know, and then you almost feel guilty because you're talking to other people who are going through much more difficult things than you have. I don't know about you. I feel pretty fortunate. You know, no one very close to me. I've had a couple friends who've had it. They have recovered. Nobody in my family or close group has had to go to the hospital. So you almost feel guilt that you feel a little depressed because what? We're staying home. Who cares? But it does get tough after a while if you think about the big picture of having to do this for months.
Well, it does. And, you know, as I've always said, I'm pretty good at doing nothing. But, you know, I'm also pretty good at looking forward to what my job is. And my job, obviously, is doing baseball games, which I absolutely love. And, you know, this is the time of the year that we're supposed to be doing that. I feel like we're still in the off season. It seems like we've been home from Florida for like 2 years since we were down there in spring training. And it's not even the end of April yet. It's amazing how long this feels. But, you know, unfortunately, yesterday my son-in-law lost his grandmother through coronavirus. She was in a nursing home. So that's as close as it's got to hitting our family. But it's just horrible. It's just terrible what's going on. And, of course, in our state right now, as you know, I mean, you know, it's as bad as it's probably going to get right now. They're at the peak, and there's no signs of anything going away here in Massachusetts. So, you know, we got to sit tight. We got to do what we got to do, stay, keep ourselves healthy, stay by the guidelines, and, you know, hope that someday we're back doing what we both love to do, and that's baseball.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, we lost our dog last Friday.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, thank you, and I appreciate you reached out with the note. I appreciate that. It's you know, and again, it's a weird time because something like that happens and you feel, well, but other people are going through tougher things than that. So you feel guilty about talking about your dog. But we had, you know, we're 16 years old. We've had her for
that's part years. Of the family.
Absolutely. Part of the family. And that was tough. And then just to, I don't know if you can see it, my lip is all puffed up today. I woke up yesterday with some kind of allergic reaction to everything and all over me. And I've never had one before. We wonder, I had my face kind of buried in her fur at the end when we met. And you wonder if I got poison sumac or ivy or something.
Yeah, maybe.
But they got me on prednisone. I'm on steroids, man. I want to play some baseball. Let's go.
Go work out.
You might as well use it to our advantage. But it's amazing, you know, little things like that right now. You got to fight off the blues because they will come in and you got nowhere to go. You know, normally – and you were one of the first people who sort of said this to me. I started traveling with you back in 02 and 03 doing the sidelines. And I remember you said, even in broadcasting, the beauty of the game is no matter what's going on in your life, for the next few hours, you focus on the game and your routine and your role. And I know it's even more so as a player, but as a broadcaster, it's the same way. And I think that's what I really miss. Even doing this is a half hour where I focus on talking to you and make sure we do it right and just something to focus on. We've all lost that, and that makes it tough.
Yeah, you know, any kind of resemblance of what we do for our living, I think, helps, you know. And I think doing this little podcast that we got going, I think, certainly helps me. I know it does, and I'm sure it helps you. And sorry to hear about your face all breaking up. The good thing about it is you don't have to be on camera tonight with a game. You have to use all kind of makeup to cover it up. So you got plenty of time to let that heal, TC.
Yeah, the other good news is I can wear a mask to go out and nobody will notice, right?
Exactly, anyway. You should be doing that.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Okay, so you said you watch a lot of these press conferences. We've all been watching Dr. Anthony Fauci, right? He is the voice of reason through all of this. And by the way, I don't know if I was looking him up. He went to Holy Cross, so spent some time here in Massachusetts.
Basketball player, too.
Basketball player in high school. He's from New York. He's a Yankee fan. I don't want to, you know, lose any respect for him because of that, but he is a Yankee fan. He was interesting last week, Jerry, where he said, we can get baseball back this year.
Yeah.
But he said players are going to have to be isolated, well surveilled is the way he put it. You know, at hotels, we've talked about this, playing in the ballpark with no one in the stands. And right. I know at the very beginning, you were kind of against empty ballparks.
Yeah.
Have you changed on that because it's dragging on so long at all?
No, I haven't. You know, I just don't see where that's workable. Now, today I saw another interview of Fauci saying that at some point this year, we'd probably be able to play games in stadiums where obviously people would be separated, but they would allow crowds in. And quite frankly, TC, I don't see us starting till some point, till it gets maybe to that point. The whole, as I've talked about before, and I'm bringing myself back as a player right now, if I can, you know, I would want no part, obviously, of being quarantined in a hotel and going from a hotel to a ballpark back to the hotel. And it would be almost impossible to do. And when you think of the magnitude, you know, how many players are going to have to do that? And how many teams are going to do that? I just don't see it workable. Now, I understand it's ideas they're throwing out, and I give them a lot of credit for trying to make something happen. But I don't think either one, the Arizona one or the Florida one, is possible. I just don't think that's possible. And they're going to have to get creative in some other way. But, you know, the ideal thing would be, obviously, and I'm not going to feel safe, quite frankly, I'm going to be honest with you, till there's a vaccine. Now, the vaccine is going to be at least a year away. But even if they came out with some kind of thing where if you got COVID-19, there was a treatment for it that would, you know, you could, you know, so people are not dying from it. It'd be like fighting off the flu, you know, even though people die from the flu also, but, you know, not like crazy stuff like what's going on right now. So I wouldn't personally be comfortable with it as a player going down there too. And then, you know, they'd be separated from their families. And if they had to leave town, they'd have to be quarantined again for 2 weeks. There's just so much that goes into it that I don't think is possible.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you saw it either. I just saw this morning. The Athletic is reporting now that there's a new discussion going on that would include Texas. The new ballpark for the Rangers has the roof. It's a dome. And there are a lot of minor league teams in Texas, right? You played minor league ball in Texas at one point.
Oh, did I ever. Talk about some long bus rides. Wow.
So that's the idea now, is maybe you could have three locations. And again, I think the hope is this would maybe be for a month, right, to get baseball started a little earlier, then maybe you go to your stadiums, but now you divide your teams within three locations, Florida, Texas, and Arizona. But it still doesn't address any of your concerns, which is right. Isolation, keeping the players away from their families, right. Who's allowed in, umpires, would broadcasters be there, or would they be back in studio doing it on a monitor?
Right.
There's a lot of questions. But I do wonder if it comes down to baseball or no baseball, if they might not go that way just to get some sort of a season in.
Well, I hate to be Mr. Pessimistic on this, but I don't think they will. I really don't, because it's the logistics are just too difficult, and they would be traveling involved obviously with this. Now, how are you going to, you know, fly from one place to the other, you know, with this fire still going around? And remember, you know, some of the country hasn't been hit hard by it, but, you know, it's still traveling. And we can't see it. You know, we can't see where this is going. So it's you know, I'm trying to speak as I mean, I want baseball more than anybody to come back. I want to get back to work. But I just don't see how these things are possible. I really don't. And I give them a lot of credit. I really do, for trying to make things possible and make things get going. You know, I think people would love to sit there and watch a game on TV, whether there's people in the stands or not in the stands. And I think for our point of view, I think the best possible thing would be, because they're going to be focused on the players, obviously, and they're going to be focused on, you know, those who travel with the ball club. I think for us, the best option probably would be do the games from the studio. You know, we're safe. We're in a safe environment in the studio. You know, you'd be able to travel back and forth from your home to work. So, I'm so lost with this right now. And it seems like every day that goes by, I get more and more lost. You know, it's like, I just don't see it happening in the near future. I don't see anything happening in the near future, which really disappoints me.
Remember, if you guys end up in studio doing the games, don't forget the one most important rule. No fish in the green room.
Put up the big sign. Put up the big sign. Yeah, I know.
And I take a lot of heat for that. It's not that I don't like fish. It's the smell. You got to smell. You know, it's office etiquette. You got to be kind.
I know it's been that way for years. And believe me, I wouldn't dare have fish in there.
Steve Lyons eats his salmon out in the hallway. He's afraid to come in the green room with it because we all yell at him. So
tell him to have a cheeseburger.
If there's one legacy I leave at Nesson, it's that you can't have fish in the green room. Okay,
and that's your place. I mean, that's
my domain, Jared. But there's plenty of room for you guys. You and OB and Eck can all come hang with me. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, when you're in there, that's your home. You own that place, so your rules stand.
Thank you. I'm glad somebody gets it. You're the only one, because I've tried that with the management at Nesson. It doesn't really fly. Patriots Day this week. You know, we're in this run right now, Jerry, where every day's the same, right? You wake up, what day is it? Who cares? But Monday was a tough one for me because that's just such a special day. And I live, you know, not far from the route as it comes through Metro West from Hopkinton. We're always at the game. You always see that. It's just such a great day in Boston. Kind of a tough one this week not to have that day.
It really was, you know, and I thought about it, you know. I got up Monday morning. It was like no other day. You know, it was like every other day. But, you know, then I started to look at Twitter and I said, oh, this is, you know, the Marathon Monday day, you know, and then all of a sudden there's no marathon, there's no baseball, there's nothing. And, you know, I really enjoy that day too. I'm like you. I mean, it's so exciting in the city. You have the 11 o'clock start. It's the only time of the year that I can say Buenos dias, amigos, because it's the only morning game we ever have. And then, you know, we go on and play the game. And as we're finishing, they're coming across the finish lines. And it's such a terrific day. And every time I think of that, you know, I think of the one where we had, obviously, the terrible bombing. And I remember that day like it was yesterday. You know, we played our game and we go on to the bus because we were going to Cleveland after that game. And that's when word started to spread. I remember Jenny Dell at that time had her phone and she said, oh, there's been an attack at the finish line of some kind of bombing at the finish line. We were shocked. We were already sitting on the bus getting ready to go to Cleveland. And then the information kept coming back in. So every Patriots Day, that's what I think about. And I thought about it an awful lot about it this year.
Yeah, totally. And we were doing the post-game show right on Jersey Street on the stage. You guys, the bus is right around the corner from us, so we always keep an eye on you guys. And there's usually a police escort that pulls you out from the ballpark. And all those cruisers took off. We thought you guys were leaving, but they were responding. And that's when we got the heads up that it had gone down. And Tim Wakefield and I were signing off, and they said, stay on. Tim had just left. And and so I stayed on for another hour, just showing footage as it came in. We had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, it was horrible. And I remember getting to Cleveland and, you know, turning the TV on and watching what, you know, then we're getting a real good idea of what happened because we were actually flying at the time, so we didn't know a lot that was going on. And it was just a horrible, horrible feeling that we had. And then we had to go out and play the Cleveland, you know, series that and everybody was really down about it. So that's what I think of when I think of the Patriots Day game now, and it's not a good memory.
No, although when you think ahead to what happened in the rest of that year, to me, that's part of why we do need to get baseball back this year. We saw it, you know, after 9/11. My father told me about how baseball mattered after World War II. You know, we saw it after the Boston Marathon bombing. The anniversary Monday was also not Patriots Day alone, but the anniversary of David Ortiz giving the speech out on the mound. The whole Boston Strong thing resonated. And then, you know, to me, the moment was at the end when they won the World Series. They had the parade.
Yeah.
And we stopped at the finish line to put that
on
the finish line. Remember that? And that was a great example of why we can say sports don't really matter, and they don't, but they can mean a lot to people who are trying to get back to normal and trying to rally around something. And I think we need a little bit of that right now.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I mean, I check my Twitter account every day, and people are just, you know, chomping at the bit to get back to see some baseball games. And, you know, they like the games, obviously, that we're putting on. It brings them back in the past a little bit. And, you know, it's great that Nesson's doing that. But the fact is, you know, some real-time baseball, you know, I mean, we really, really need that. But, I just wish I could be more optimistic about a timetable. I really do. But I think about this all the time. It's constantly on my mind. You know, you got nothing else to do but sit here and think about it when you know you're supposed to be working at this time of the year. This is our season, you know. And the other thing about this time of year, too, is also the Bruins are in the playoffs. We're doing baseball. It's great. It's a great time. You know, the Celtics are in the playoffs. It's a great time, you know, in the sports world to have all that going on in Boston at the same time and you know, in our community. And unfortunately, this year, it's not happening. But, you know, someday we'll get through this and we'll be looking back on it. And, you know, it's something that our kids and our grandkids will be talking about for the rest of their lives because they're experiencing something that we've never, ever experienced in our life.
No doubt about that. And by the way, next week, you talk about the games we're showing. This week's the best of Roger Clemens. I want to talk to you about that in a moment. But next week, they start doing 2004. Which I think is going to be a lot of fun. They can show that entire playoff series, and that's going to be a good time.
The idiots.
They didn't know any better, right? You could be down 3-0. They didn't know any better. Roger Clemens. How about these numbers? We're looking them up, and this is the best of Roger Clemens week. So we're showing 6 games on Nesson. Obviously, 6 of his best starts, regular season starts with the Red Sox. In 6 starts that we're showing this week, 54 innings, 79 strikeouts and only 1 run allowed in his 6 starts. We showed the 20 strikeout game against Seattle 1986. We're going to wrap it up on Saturday with the 20 strikeout game in Detroit 10 years later. You were in the booth for that game.
Yes.
What made Roger Clemens such an unhittable guy when he was like that?
Well, you know, he was a big, strong guy. You know, he reminded me a lot like of Nolan Ryan, the way he was built. You know, but he was built stronger up top, and he had very strong legs, the same thing that Ryan had. And, you know, he used great push-off with those legs to get his velocity, obviously. Had a great split-fingered fastball. He was fearless. He was intimidating. He was all of the things you needed to be a great pitcher. You know, plus he was blessed with great stuff. So, I mean, it was a pleasure to watch him pitch. You know, I've got the chance to watch him and Pedro in my career as a broadcaster here, and it doesn't get much better than that. And you're right, TC. I was in Detroit, and it was a very small crowd in Detroit that night, you know, that this happened. Hasselman was the catcher. And, you know, you're kind of going along through the games, and he's looking pretty good. But there was nothing to tell you that, you know, like in the fourth inning, that this was going to be a 20-strikeout game. There was really nothing to tell you that. Then it just kept piling up and piling up. And as time went on, you're going, man, he might do this again, or he might beat it, you know. And that's when you really started to get into the thing. I don't even remember my reaction to it. But it was an honor for me to be in Detroit. And in Detroit, the funny story is the old booth, it was right on top of the field. It was, I mean, you almost felt like you're in the batter's box. And you could hear Clemens' pitches that night, the whistling of the fastball, you know. And you could hear players complaining as they were heading back to the dugout. It was just completely overmatched. And that's a feeling and a memory I'll never forget. And, you know, to see him do something like that and tie his own record was pretty special for me to be part of. But, you know, it's funny. I've done so many games in my life, and there's so many, you know, there are only a few that really stick out that I can remember. And that's certainly one of them. So this is going to be a great week to watch one of the best pitchers ever to pitch in a game of baseball, you know, do his thing.
Well, the first 20 strikeout game, 1986, was a raw April night at Fenway.
Yes.
Hardly anybody in the ballpark, I think 10,000 or so. Most of the media was over at the Garden because the Celtics had a playoff game. They all wound up grabbing their stuff and going back to Fenway to try to cover the end of it. Now, where were you in 86? You stopped in 84 playing, right?
Yeah.
Did you coach right away for a year? Was that the year?
86, I was hurt. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, and I think I'm correct on this, I did play behind Clemens in a couple of games. And I remember him coming up as a kid and pitching a game, I believe it was in Cleveland. And Andre Thornton, maybe?
Yeah.
Was on second base. And I went up and I asked him, I said, what about this kid? What do you think? He says, he's got pretty good stuff. You know, he looks pretty good. And this was just when he was just, you know, he just had been called up to the big league. So, he was pretty good, you know, and he went on to be pretty good the rest of his career. But I did play a couple of games behind him. But then my knee blew out, And then I was not part of it anymore. So, you know, fortunately for me, I did get to do it as a broadcaster, though.
You know, that was going back there and just off my memory. I mean, that was that run of great pitching that was being developed in the organization, right? I think
yes.
Hurst came up right around that time, Bruce Hurst.
Yeah.
I think Oil Can Boyd was up, but even Al Nipper, who was like on the back end of that rotation, those guys had all kind of come through Pawtucket. There's someone else in there I can't think of right now. Was John Tudor around that time, or was he a different time?
He might have been around at that time. I'll tell you a funny story about Bruce Hurst. He almost quit the game of baseball. We were in Baltimore, and he was a very religious, you know, conscious guy, you know, that, you know, everything had to be the right way. And he, I think baseball life for him was a little bit tough. You know, it was a little bit tough, the way people acted and the way they talk and the way they communicated together. You know, it's a little bit different, as you know.
Yeah.
And it kind of bothered Hurst, you know. And I remember one game he pitched in Baltimore, and he actually was thinking about quitting baseball. As a matter of fact, I think this story is true, where he left the ballpark walking, like that was going to be it for him. He was done. He couldn't take it anymore. And then, you know, I guess I don't know how they got him back or how he decided to come back, but he did, thank goodness. And he went on to have a fabulous career after that. And he's one of those guys that said when he left Boston, it was never the same. But at that age, he had a very, very difficult time adjusting to Major League Baseball life and the type of the people that were in it. It just wasn't his bag.
Yeah, I remember stories about that. But what a great guy. I've got to meet him a few times.
Oh, he's one of the best.
Really, and a smart guy as far as, everything, but the game. He's a guy who thinks the game, didn't just have a great arm, had a good mind for the game as well. All right, so I'm going to put you on the spot. We have not discussed this, but it just popped into my mind. We're talking about all these great pitchers, and I'm just going to say off the top of your head, because you've had no chance to think this through, but if you were going to put together a five-man rotation, the all-time history of the Boston Red Sox, understanding you haven't had a chance to go and look at Baseball Reference and pick up numbers like everybody does now, but just your first reaction, and they don't have to be 1 through 5, but give me 5 guys who you think might have been amongst the best you've ever seen.
Wow. That's
we probably we should probably do show prep one of these days where I give you this idea.
I can name 2 right off the shoot, which is Pedro and Roger.
Right.
Okay, I would even put Schilling in that list. Okay,
big game pitcher, a guy who always stepped up, especially in the playoffs.
You know, like him or hate him, you know, I mean, I think he's one of the best that, you know, that ever pitched in the game. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I really do. Let's see. Now we go after that.
And if you want, why don't we keep it? Guys you've seen, so either when you were playing or when, I mean, we don't we don't have to talk about guys from the 1800s, you know.
Here's another guy, Dick Raddatz.
Oh, the monster.
Dick Raddatz. He was a premier closer, you know, in the days where a closer wasn't a big thing. Closing a game for him was coming in the 5th inning and finishing the rest of the game.
Right.
He's another guy. And Jim Lomborg, another one who, you know, was a Cy Young Award winner here in the impossible dream season of 67. Unfortunately, Jim had that skiing accident after and never was quite the same over that. But I'm sure I'm missing a ton of guys. But those are guys.
That's off the top of your head. That was the assignment. Off the top of your head, guys.
Yeah, that's the best I can. You know me. I don't have long-term memory. But I think that's the best I can come up with at the time. Now, I'm sure I'll walk out of this room after and say, oh, man, what did I tell DC? There's got to be 5 other guys.
The only 2 other guys that, again, just popped into my head as I thought were Louis Tiant, obviously, everything he did. But that's a little before you were playing or broadcasting.
I actually was a teammate of Louis.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Did you understand anything he said? Did you understand anything he said back then?
I still don't. Still don't. We sit down and talk in spring training. I don't know what he's talking about.
He is the best. There's no one who's more fun to spend a half hour with at spring training. And if you can
– that's another great call.
You get him and Jim Rice together for 5 minutes, you will laugh for 5. I mean, it's like those the Muppets there, Woodward.
Yeah.
I forget their name. Waldorf and Ass. I don't know. Anyway,
they really go after each other good.
Oh, it's the greatest. It's the greatest. And then this would be more recent, and I wouldn't be as confident. But John Lester, for the time he was here, had a pretty dominant stretch there. You know, and and that's one I know they'd like to do over again, because you would have loved to keep him.
Well, they admitted that. They admitted they made a mistake by letting him go, which I think helped in the Chris Sale signing. You know, they didn't want the same thing to happen, you know, that with Lester, that, you know, and let that happen to Sale. Unfortunately, Sale now has the injury. But, you know, he'll come back from that. He'll be fine when he gets back from that. It's going to, you know, take him a year, a little bit over a year. But I have no – you know, most of these guys come back throwing harder than what they did before. So I don't see any reason why that wouldn't happen to Sale either. But with Sale's on, he's going to be right in the top.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If he, especially, you just need a little more longevity from him. But if he comes back –
need more time to put in. But, you know, from what I – you know, that first year he was here, and I went, oh, my God. You know, I said, this guy's right at the top of the list. Matter of fact, I said on TV, I said, he brings the same electricity to the ballpark that Pedro did when he pitched.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt about him.
Pedro said on the pregame show with us that first year, Sale, right, middle of the year, we had Pedro on because I wanted to hear his thoughts. And he had, you know, Pedro, he always has the great line. And Pedro said, now I know what it must have been like to watch me pitch when I was on top of my game. Because I have that same feeling as a fan watching Chris Sale pitch.
You're exactly right. And, you know, it took the fans a while to get into it. You know, but after about three or four Fenway starts, they were into it. And it was kind of must-see TV. It was, you know, how many is he going to strike out tonight? How bad is he going to make hitters look? And, you know, he's up there too. So we brought up quite a few names, you know, without even having to think about it. But, you know, I can go back a little bit farther than you. And that's why I dropped in a Dick Raddatz on you.
Yeah, well, that's – and I love that because, like you said, he wasn't a three-out closer. He was a
four. Oh, no. Pesky would call on him at any time in the game to go in there and close a game. So, it was amazing. And the big monster, big huge guy, you know, threw the side monster a little bit, threw hard. Hitters didn't like him.
Well, that was good stuff. We flew right through this one. This was a quick one this week.
That's it? We're done?
Unless you got something else important you want to pass on to everybody.
Actually, there's nothing important happening here.
What are you watching? You watching anything good on TV right now?
I got a chance to watch Days of Our Lives today from 1 to 2 before I came out with you. So at least that's keeping me going. That's real hot.
Now I don't watch soap operas, I must admit. I've never watched – well, I have, but I don't.
I've only been watching it for 45 years.
Do they bring this pandemic into the show yet? Is that written into the show?
No. These are all pre-taped. Like, okay. I think they're like a year in advance.
Oh, is that right?
6 months to a year in advance, yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when it gets the, you know, obviously time when a pandemic's coming. I'm watching a show on Netflix. I don't know if I can say this. I can say it.
Yeah. You
know, the name of it is Schitt's Creek. And
Schitt's Creek.
Schitt's Creek, yeah.
It's a great show. I love it.
Yeah, and we've been hooked on that for the last, like, you know, like 4 nights. We've been watching all these episodes. It's not hilarious,
no,
but it's funny.
And it's kind of feel good.
Yeah, it is.
Like, I watch so many dark things. I watch Ozark, they're killing everybody. I watch Westworld, and the robots are killing everybody. I watch Better Call Saul. Those are the shows I'm watching right now. And he defends all the guys who kill everybody. And then you put on Schitt's Creek, and you can say, because it's S-C-H-I-T-T. It's the name, town's named after a guy named Schitt, S-C-H-I-T-T. and it's like one of the only shows when I turn it off, I kind of feel good. I don't feel, you know, worse.
Yeah,
like I do
yeah exactly. It's not like a belly laugh show.
No.
But it's like, that was cute.
Yeah, it's cute. Yeah.
Yeah.
And comfort food. Sometimes we need a little comfort food.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I'll be watching it tonight.
There you go. I will too. There you go.
After I watch your show.
Hey, thank you. 8 o'clock at home with TC. Well, Jerry, this was fun. It was a good one. I appreciate the time.
All right, TC. Take care of yourself.
You too. Take care, buddy. We'll talk soon. That's the end of this edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. Thanks for watching, listening, streaming, whatever you did to catch us.